Why stocks in Asia are climbing a mountain of optimism. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. For the first time this millennium, stocks, as measured by the Nikkei Index in Japan, hit the milestone known as 20,000. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes is following this from Tokyo. Good morning, Rupert.
Good morning, David.
So had we checked earlier in the trading day, we would have seen the Nikkei above 20,000. I mean, it was really the close of the last millennium when we saw that index that high. What are some of the reasons being talked about?
I think there's just a lot of optimism around right now, David. There is a lot of hope and expectation that we're going to see a pickup in the Japanese economy boosted by the low yen, standing at around 120 to the US dollar, which is great news for Japanese exporters. So there's hope that big companies like Toyota are going to again post record earnings as they announce their earnings in the coming weeks. And that means that big companies here like Toyota can afford to start raising their wages, raising the bonuses for their workers. And that's what's driving the good sentiment in the markets here.
I also understand that some huge Japanese pension funds are following a similar logic and have been buying quite heavily.
We've got the biggest, I think it is the biggest monetary easing campaign going on in the world here in Japan at the moment. They're buying $680 billion worth of government bonds every year. And also the government's enormous pension fund has been allowed to move out of buying government bonds and actually start buying into the stock market for the first time. It wasn't allowed to do that before. And so that obviously is having an impact on the market as well.
The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
By the way, if you don't believe me that the new millennium did not start until the year 2001, not 2000, look it up and you'll see the debate. Now let's do the numbers. So the Nikkei hit 20,000 during the trading day, but it closed lower than that, 19,907, a fall of less than 0.2%. Hong Kong's key index rose 1.2%. The FTSE index in London is up about 0.3%. S&P Dow and NASDAQ futures are up a bit. And while there's partying in Japan over the low yen, the high dollar is being watched with concern by the U.S. Federal Reserve. The dollar is up at 106 for a euro. President Obama's in Panama today for the Summit of the Americas. Delegates there objected to the continued exclusion of Cuba, and this year President Raul Castro will be in attendance. Reporter Tim Fitzsimmons has more now on the Obama administration's evolving political and economic policy toward Latin America.
There's a reason we hear the word ISIS much more than we hear the word Colombia.
American presidents have a hard time paying attention to Latin America.
That's Moises Naim, a fellow at the Carnegie Endowment. He says U.S. policy seeks to reduce illegal immigration at the source.
The top priority for the United States is to have strong economies that create jobs.
That's a shift from decades of focusing on bolstering Latin American militaries and funding the war on drugs, according to Bruce Bagley, professor of political science at the University of Miami.
The United States has moved beyond a single policy towards Latin America.
So Honduras, which has a high level of poverty and violence, would get a different treatment than stable and prosperous Panama.
One of the major constraints is the absence of capital and the absence of expertise.
That's one reason why the U.S. announced a new program to connect its Small Business Administration and outside capital to Latin American entrepreneurs. Maria Contreras-Sweet is the U.S. Small Business Administrator.
That's how we help our youth change their future, change their lives.
It's a lighter touch, and one the Obama administration hopes will help turn a new page. In Washington, I'm Tim Fitzsimmons for Marketplace.
Spring has yet to fully take hold in many parts of the country, and talking more about the dismal science might not help. So Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell looked into a part of his beat that we hope is uplifting, the economics of festivals. Chris?
Absolutely, David. It is the festival season. We have summer music festivals. We have festivals of ideas, book festivals. And so this is the time when people get together with good weather, music, ideas, books. I think it's wonderful.
These are loads of fun when I go. But you reminded me, these things are supposed to die out in the digital age, right? The death of distance. You could just do some sort of webinar and go via a Skype thing, and you could just do it that way.
You know, David, I think there's a theme to some of our conversations because public libraries were supposed to disappear, cities were supposed to disappear, and what's happened in the information age and this digital ecology is that people want to mix together, and this is where innovations come from. And what a festival does, it creates an environment for people to wander around and see what other people are doing, and that's what people are hungry for in the digital age.
All right, so inspiration is a goal in itself, but I have to ask the money question. Do people make money at these festivals?
I don't think so. I mean, you can go online and you'll see lots of studies about, you know, for every dollar that's spent on this festival, it brings $2-3 into the local economy. A lot of it is tourist dollars. But, you know, I'm always skeptical about that. If they're sustainable, they're making enough money to be in business the next year.
All right, the festivals themselves, but what about people who are at the festivals flogging their product, their book, their movie, their song?
So I think these festivals are becoming one of the critical points in indie capitalism. So indie capitalism is the independent musician, the author. It's hard for them to reach their audience and market themselves. These festivals allow for indie capitalists to nurture their community, meet their fans, and then the internet, the social media allows them to stay in touch. And so this is a big part of the indie capitalist market.
It's hard to think of a happier word in the English language, the festival. Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thank you for this.
Thanks, David.
And with so many set to work on their taxes this weekend, there's this. Bloomberg News reports the Internal Revenue Service is looking to hire younger millennials. Just 3% of IRS employees are under the age 30. One anti-tax group suggested the only millennial who'd be interested would take the job ironically so they could use an antiquated typewriter and Snapchat about it all day. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers, our online digital producer Tobin Lowe. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.